Okay, starting hour two of the Hale-Bopp Planet X special. Once again, the title of this, Hale-Bopp, Harrington, Art Bell, Coast to Coast AM, and Planet 10 Update. So you're starting to see from the first hour, which was my regular Thursday evening, July 23rd, 2015, radio show, which was free to everybody. This begins the lecture series, the three additional hours, and the topic, by listening to the first hour, which is you have to listen to first, of course, the regular show, the title hopefully is starting to become apparent. I talked about Hale-Bopp, I talked about Dr. Harrington, the head of the Naval Observatory, I talked about Art Bell, the Coast to Coast AM radio show, and the Planet 10, and so I'm using the term Planet 10. What is the number 10, or what is that term X? There's two meanings to the term Planet X. One is it's an astronomical term that was used throughout history, going literally back to the Middle Ages. There were times when people thought they saw another planet, and possibly they did. Possibly there was something there. So Planet X literally means like an undesignated, unnamed planet. Also, 10, is the X is the Roman numeral 10, which would be the 10th planet after Pluto, which is the 9th discovered planet. And I still rank Pluto as a planet, excuse me very much. Pluto is very much a planet, and the whole reason they wanted to stop naming planets, the reason the Astronomical Congress voted against Pluto being a planet, because all of a sudden they had about 100 other new planets. And it was going to look pretty silly if all of a sudden they went from 90 to 100 planets. And so they voted to not do that. And also that would raise the entire issue of Planet X off the charts. And really raise it in the eyes of the public. So instead of doing that, they demoted Pluto from being a planet. And anyway, so tonight, this hour two of the 4 hours lecture series, I'm going to be going through a tremendous amount of detail. And some of this I'll be bouncing back and forth between topics because it's just too dense material to cover and just go straight through, for example, all science. So now what I'm going to cover, and this is very important to understand the history. That's something I started really working on here. And this is a history I lived through. I didn't read it on somebody else's web page. You got to understand that all the jokers running around the internet claiming to be Planet X experts or whatever, all of them came on the scene in the mid-2000s. The only other one that was really there was the crazy lady talks to aliens up till about 2003. And when that didn't happen, and of course that was the whole point, to make a predicted date, have mass suicides, and then it turns out to be a orange full moon coming up, a very large full moon, and then all of this craziness, and then the white hats could come in and just have a heyday, dispelling any concept that there might be some other planet out there. But it backfired. It really raised a lot more attention, and they didn't count on me stepping into the scene. So what I'm going to do now is go back through that history, and we're going to go back to actually into the 1980s. And remember that in 1979 to 81, really, I was the only person working on this particular topic of extra solar system planets. Velikovsky had made a name for himself, and very much deservedly so, by selling his books World in Collision, Earth in Upheaval, and Ages in Chaos. And what he concentrated on was the planet Venus, that it came in as a large comet. Of course, back in those days, the astronomical community had no idea what was going on. And that included the Tier 1 science. And remember that Tier 1 science in that day and age was not really that well defined. That really came in also in 1991, when Harrington came back with the data from New Zealand and showed Planet X. That's when, for example, I'll give a little bit of history here, George Bush Sr. had just been elected president. the Gulf War was starting. The first person, now remember that George Bush came out of the CIA. He had been vice president under Reagan. Basically, George Bush Sr. ran the White House. When Reagan got a bullet in the side, that was kind of a signal to him, interestingly enough, by George Bush Sr.'s neighbor's kid. Interesting. After Kennedy was shot, the CIA pretty much ran the presidency. And if you go up through Nixon and all those days, the CIA was running the White House, as it still is. So then 1991, George Bush Sr., prior vice president under Reagan, becomes president. His first appointment, now typically a first appointment from a president is like a Secretary of State, a Department of Defense, whatever. His very first appointment was a guy named Dan Golden, who came out of the CIA also. Dan Golden's job was to put the cap on NASA. Now, I lived through that. In the 80s, I knew the people at Goddard, at JPL. They knew me on a first-name basis. I could call up. The secretaries knew my voice, especially at Goddard. And during that time, I had given presentations, invited talks from the scientists at Goddard, at Los Alamos National Laboratory, etc. So it was like these people knew who I was. They knew my story, the whole idea of the plasma discharge comet model, etc. And remember, this is way before Hale-Bopp. This is way before Planet X popular concept came along. And what I'm telling people is that these large comets are accumulating matter, and the comets are accumulating matter, and the big ones can become planets because of capture, because of tail drag, and all the processes, etc. Okay, so in comes Dr. Harrington from the Naval Observatory, just fresh back from New Zealand, hands full of data, showing Planet X. And as I said in the first presentation, the first part of the presentation, there is no question now that he was looking at the nucleus of Hale-Bopp, and it's very likely he would have seen it migrating back and forth. He didn't just go down there and take one picture. He probably took quite a few pictures, and with his photography would have been able to tell for sure that Hale-Bopp's nucleus had a companion, because it would have been wobbling back and forth ever so slightly. It's called blink comparison photography, and what you do is you take a photograph, which he already had from prior years, of that region of the sky, which he took in New Zealand in the month of May and June, of that southern region of the sky. And so by looking, and obviously he would have taken many, many pictures in his trip to New Zealand in 1991. That was his final trip. And also the supporting material, you will see that contract where he is under contract to NASA. He's going to New Zealand. He's saying this is definitely what's pulling Neptune and Uranus down in its orbit. And he's going down to take the final astrograph photos. Obviously, he took many photos. And when he got back, it would have been easy to determine that that baby had a companion. The mathematics, very simple, straightforward. The radius of the orbit, the period of the orbit, gives the mass of the central nucleus of what eventually became Hale-Bopp, because in that days, you couldn't call it Hale-Bopp. They were literally calling it Planet X. So when it became discovered in 1995, July 23rd, 1995, Alan Hale and Thomas Bopp were just amateur astronomers looking through their telescopes, but NASA had already been tracking this baby for 4 years. And that's another thing they don't want to tell you, because that proves that they would track an object that was potentially threatening to Earth and not tell you. This is absolute 100% proof positive. That's what the agenda is in these agencies, and it goes all the way up to the president. Dan Golden's job was to put the lid on NASA. And I witnessed this. I knew the scientists there. I saw them go under gag orders. I saw a lot of them leave. The secretaries left. The staff left. They flushed out NASA. And the only people that remained were the ones that were under very strict gag orders. Now, I wonder why that happened in 1991. Well, that's because it's very clear now that this was all dealing with the topic of Planet X. It was somewhere in the around 1993 to 94 range when they must have realized that this object is going to become visible. Amateur astronomers are going to see it. So they created the crazy lady talks to alien Planet X baloney that 2003, big full moon coming over the horizon, and that people would mistake that for the big orange Planet X. If you remember on Nancy Leder's book regarding the aliens and Planet X, she had a big orange disc, and that was to identify, in fact, all of the crazies that came afterwards pumping this false issue of Planet X, the issues that were falsified. And remember that the issue of Planet X is very real. So what they wanted to do was create a totally false image around the concept of Planet X. There's nobody on the planet that has put in more positive information on the subject of the many Planet X objects than me. So at any rate, this is the whole object here of these talks, is to clarify history. So we have Dan Golden, 1991, as Harrington comes back, hands full of data from New Zealand. Harrington dies mysteriously. Rapid onset cancer. Now, he was known to smoke a pipe. Let's go back to the mid-80s now. A guy named Sitchin, Zachariah Sitchin, who later wrote books about the 10th planet, about the ancient Anunnaki civilizations, etc. I put a certain amount of quality into what Sitchin did. He brought into the public eye, somewhat like Velikovsky, the topic of ancient Planet X type objects. But here's the problem that has grown into the modern version of Planet X. Sitchin, when Sitchin talked to Harrington, it was early in Harrington's career in the search for Planet X. And the orbits that they had back then, this 3,600-year orbit, which couldn't possibly be true, is what they were working at the time, in the mid-80s. The final orbits that came out of Harrington's work were the orbits of Hale-Bopp. And like I said in the first part, these were on Hale-Bopp was on a near-direct collision course with Earth at the time it was discovered. So you see all of the reasons for this going on. George Bush, very first nominee to... And in his cabinet, in his staff, not even a cabinet member, the head of NASA, Dan Golden, goes in and puts the lid. And I witnessed this. I knew the scientists. I knew them. I could see them being put under pressure. They stopped talking. They couldn't communicate. Secretaries were fired. I was able to talk to some of the secretaries after that. And whereas before in the 1980s, I could call up and talk to them, and these scientists became different persons. They would not even give you the time of day. And there was a big reason for that, because they were all being followed, the ones that were left. So back to Sitchin. The information he got from Harrington was very early in the search for Planet X. This idea of a 3,600-year orbit, and the orbit was totally incorrect based on what is known now. So there, something that is repeated over and over and over again today by people of Planet X, 3,600-year orbit, is totally incorrect. And Sitchin never corrected that. It's never been corrected, so I'm correcting it now. And I always said that orbit could not possibly have been true. But now I know for certain that what Harrington was looking at in the end, in the very final 1991 analysis, the Harrington work, the final Harrington work, in which I just followed up, went down and did the follow-up Harrington expedition, was the orbit of Hale-Bopp, which was down in a region of the sky. I'll just talk about that a bit later. I'll include it right now. Okay, now I'm actually reading from a paper that's called The Location of Planet X, R.S. Harrington, U.S. Naval Observatory, Washington, D.C., May 17th, received as an abstract 1988, and revised the 12th of July 1988. So this is a full, let's see, that's 7 years before in July. So it's literally 7 years before the discovery of Hale-Bopp, the comet. And I'll read also later on the actual 1991 presentation, the NASA contract, where Harrington went down to New Zealand, made the final astrograph photos. But here's what he says. Planet X, if it exists at all, is most likely to be found at present in the region of Scorpius, with a considerably less likelihood that it is in Taurus. These are constellations. And so what, remember, this is before he confirmed this. Now, I want to read the final analysis here. And this is something I talked about earlier. This is in the acknowledgments of this paper. This is in published in Astrophysics Data Systems, and also under acknowledgment. This is a NASA publication, SAO NASA. In the acknowledgments, Harrington says this: I would like to thank Tom Van Flandern. Remember me talking about him in the first hour? Harrington says, I would like to thank Tom Van Flandern, who first convinced me that Planet X might be real and worth looking for, and whose thinking guided the initial stages of this project. Ken Seidelman gave me access to the Uranus and Neptune residual data, as well as continued advice and criticism on the project in general. And then, there was other people involved. But look at Tom Van Flandern. He is the one that convinced Harrington to go do this study. Isn't it interesting that after 1991, Tom Van Flandern, a top assistant to Harrington, denied the existence of Planet X after Harrington came back with the data in hand? Do you think somebody was whispering in Van Flandern's ear? Yes, because this is exactly the time when they put the lid on everybody. Now, I want to talk about the orbit of Hale-Bopp just a little bit, because where Harrington originally saw it and then later photographed it, he actually, from what my calculations show, originally located it in the constellation of Triangulum in the southern hemisphere. And in that is in the exactly the part of the sky that's visible in the month of May and June. By the time later in 1991 they were talking about this, it possibly had moved up to Scorpius in moving up towards the ecliptic. So anyway, these are very important. And also in the end of this paper, he talks about the mass of Hale-Bopp being 4 Earth masses. So about 4 times the mass of Earth. But I also want to comment here, a very important scientific result is that Hale-Bopp's nucleus was not 4 times the with the 4 times the mass you would expect it to be, have the about 1.2 times the radius of Earth, but it was actually quite a bit smaller. That means that the nucleus of Hale-Bopp was extremely dense, which means it probably was the fragment of a star, a star that exploded, who knows, billions of years ago in another solar system, in another galaxy. Who even knows where these things come from? Also coming in on that orbit. So that's exactly where Hale-Bopp was at that time, was exactly where Harrington was recording the photographs. And so, and also the mass. And so all of this, the lies that came out when Hale-Bopp was discovered in 1995, then the follow-up of the Heaven's Gate mess, the Nancy Leader crazy lady talks to aliens, May 15, 2003 campaign was already going, and what her word was on Hale-Bopp, don't look at that, that's just a mirage. Listen to me, Nancy Leader, listen to her, she says. That May 15, 2003 is the real Planet X, and please look over there. Don't ever look at that Hale-Bopp thing. Now you understand, and none of this really quite made sense to me as it was unfolding. Now with my work where I've confirmed that Harrington was in fact looking at the nucleus of Hale-Bopp, now all of this other stuff comes into focus. At the same time, when standard astronomy was pumping on this idea of dirty snowballs. Now, just imagine, in 1996, comets were discovered to have X-rays. This is during the time of Hale-Bopp. So after Hyakutake, after NASA mistakenly discovered X-rays at Hyakutake, the next thing they did was they turned the Spitzer telescope to Hale-Bopp, and they discovered X-rays on Hale-Bopp. Then they started looking, and they said, hey, all the comets have X-rays. It's something they missed. That's when also a giant piece of disinformation came in to the scientific world, and a guy named Tom Cravens, I know all these guys, I've been at meetings side to side next to him, Kerry Liss, had to come up with some kind of story that somehow dirty snowballs created X-rays 30,000 miles out to the sunward side. So they created this ion exchange deal, which doesn't work at all. And in the fine print, you'll see they need an electron beam to get started. Where does a dirty snowball have an electron beam? Thank you very much. They can't explain any of this, and since nobody can get a word in edgewise into the peer-reviewed journals, these people walk off with the so-called glory in the headlights, but in the limelight, but without any ability to prove this. Then, all of a sudden, they start noticing that these comets are lighting up like a light bulb. They are fluorescing. Their spectrum is only explainable by electrical discharges in the comet, so they can't explain this either. All of my theoretical work being absolutely confirmed, I'm going to American Geophysical Union meetings, presenting my material, and these people consistently are pushing this dirty snowball comet model. Obviously, they have to do this because somebody's got their thumb on top of their head and staring at everything they do. And believe me, they did not want to talk to me about this because probably their lives were in danger because of this whole issue. This is back in the 90s, also back in the 80s, when this, before this was formulating, the issue of Planet X was really not it was a public issue, but not a lot of people paid attention to it other than this small group of professional astronomers. And Dan Golden, by the way, I've gotten some feedback from quite a few people who had interfaces with Dan. Dan doesn't like Jim McCanny very much. There's a guy named Tony Scarpelli who produced one of my videos. It's on that 8-CD revised the DVD set where I have my videos, historical significant videos, remastered on a DVD. One of them is was done for a cable TV station. The producer of that was a guy named Tony Scarpelli, and he was a fan. He was actually brought in because there were other people that were interested that put this whole package together of me doing a special for the local cable TV stations in Minnesota. And it was aired far and wide. But Tony was the producer, and he did a lot of producing. But he was the top engineer at a company called ADC. They built modems. They built electronics, commercial electronics for the telecommunications industry. Tony won the Engineer of the Award, the IEEE Engineer of the Year Award. And they were at the award ceremony. And who's giving the speech up there? Dan Golden. So after the thing, of course, Tony and Dan have a little chat. And they're talking, and Dan is like real pleased to meet Tony, Engineer of the Year. Congratulations, you know. How's everything going? Glad to be here. And in the middle of the conversation, Tony goes, after having produced my video, he goes, have you ever heard of James McCanny? And he said, Dan's golden face turned about 8 shades of red, and his face got contorted, and he finally could get out, no comment. And so Dan said, followed up, and he goes, well, you know, he talks about the plasma discharge comet model, that planets can be formed from comets, etc. And he said Dan's face went into about 10 more contortions. And finally, the only thing he could get out, Dan, the only thing Dan Golden could say was no comment. And he turned and walked away. A week later, Tony Scarpelli was fired. Engineer of the Year Award, IEEE Engineer of the Year, competing against everybody else in the United States and possibly internationally, a week later was fired from his job. So I'm not laughing at Tony, and I know Tony had a bit of trouble after that just in his personal life, but that's an example. Now, I've had other people who've also interfaced with Dan Golden and gotten the same result. Dan doesn't like Jim McCanny very much. I wonder why. Because I'm pulling their pants down in public. Now I'm finding out that the reason he was designated by George Bush Sr. as the first appointee was not, and I knew he was there to put the lid on NASA, but I didn't connect it with the Harrington discovery, that they had discovered the nucleus of Hale-Bopp long before it was Hale-Bopp, and that's literally what they were calling Planet X in the Harrington study from the Naval Observatory under the direction of NASA. They were putting the lid on that. By the way, this is when all of the underground city activity happened. It started at that point. That's when the money was redirected from black ops, etc. And that's when the information flowed up to the world bankers. And so there's a whole litany of other things that happened. It was about this time also that the Vatican began constructing a telescope in Arizona. I'm the one that broke the story on this, and a lot of people repeat this, that the Vatican has telescopes in South America, and then they built one in South America. I'm the one that broke the story on this because I personally knew the astronomers from the University of Minnesota who were on the staff of that facility, because at that time it was a bit more public. I also was able to examine the telescope and understood that that telescope was not a deep sky telescope. It was not for planetary observations. It was a wide field, very bright aperture telescope only for the use of observing comets. This telescope that the Vatican put in Arizona, this was their first telescope, started construction around 1991. And by the way, this is when, remember, Father Malachi Martin, who had been on the Art Bell Show, was recounting that when he was in the basement of the Vatican, and also another man who died under very suspicious conditions, Father Malachi Martin, he died in the late 90s, I believe, or early 2000, something like that. But he was old also. I mean, he was. It's not like they necessarily killed him for what he was saying. I always thought that, but now I don't quite think that, but I'm not sure. But the point is, when he was on Art Bell, he recounted back in the early 90s, during the Hale-Bopp days, that he had been in the basement of the Vatican, came across a computer terminal that was turned on, that had been left on, and it was an image of from the Hubble Space Telescope. It was a direct connection to the Hubble Space Telescope with an image of Hale-Bopp, but it was marked Planet X. Now, all of this makes sense. It all comes together. The Vatican asked NASA, is Hale-Bopp wormwood? And I always wondered, and I thought, well, gee, you know, it's a big comet. The Vatican, in their history, must know that comets are the things that cause damage, that Venus was a comet, and also very much intent on removing any idea that the Noah's flood or the Moses event was related to cometary activity or the birth of Christ, which I've said over and over, the Christmas star was a comet. A very unusual comet, probably a double or triple companion comet that nobody would ever mistake. But the wise men were waiting for that. Not one wise man, not two wise men, but three wise men in totally different countries. And when they got to Herod, Herod knew the sign also. That's why Herod went out and had all the firstborn killed, if you recall that little incident. And so the wise men left by cover of darkness, if you remember, and they thought, we don't want to give this guy too much information, because they didn't trust him, and for very good reason. But the Christmas star, and this is something that has been, I gave a lecture with Brad Walton, WCCO Radio, in Minneapolis, and it was before Christmas 1 year. I think that might be on my webpage, but if not, I'll have to get it up there. It was about a 2 or 3 hour special talking about the Christmas star being a comet and all the different reasons. And after that show, there were 33,000 that night. By the next morning, there were 33,000 references to the Christmas star being a planetary alignment, something that they can continue to push today. So obviously, this coming from the Vatican, which has the Rothschild banking empire as its front, and the world bankers who control the science of the world. They run the United States military, the tier one science. They own it. So when you see Dan Golden coming in from President Bush, who was the head of the CIA, which is the police force of the World Bank, you start to see all these connections and why these scientists live in fear and why I don't cater to any of this baloney. Jim McCanney has never worked for any of these people. I have never signed any contracts. I've worked independently, and I've done my own research. And now this research that I've done this spring, May, June 2015, bringing to light that what Harrington was looking at was the nucleus of Hale-Bopp. All of this comes in and is very clear. So at any rate, back to the Vatican. They knew that Hale-Bopp was a potential disaster threat to Earth, did not say anything. They were very intent on the three letters of Fatima, the third one which talked about the destruction of the Earth if people didn't get their act together. And literally, Hale-Bopp was on a course that would have really destroyed Earth if it would have continued, but because of the tail drag, it slowed down. And Earth was able to advance in its orbit by 3 months. This is something I've announced many times in the past, but not realizing that that's what Harrington had been looking at back in 1991. I always was suspicious, but now I can tell you 100% confirmed that that's what he was looking at. So the nucleus of Hale-Bopp probably was not quite as large as Earth. In fact, it could have been as small as our moon, but it was very dense. And it created a tremendously big comet and discharged the solar capacitor for a period of 6 years, went from a 4,200-year orbit down to a 2,600-year orbit, and will be back entering the solar system in about 2,600 years. Okay, so there's a whole package of science involved with Hale-Bopp. Was it a companion to something larger? And on the previous show, I said that I made a mention of 4 or 5 years after Hale-Bopp, but it could be 100 years, it could be 1,000 years, or it could be something that literally got bumped off course and is not coming back. I want to mention also that there's one other possibility, that there was a Planet X object that was down in that region of the solar system coming around through the region of Scorpius, but also then moving off towards Sagittarius, which was one other of Harrington's options in his theoretical analysis. If that were the case, and I doubt, I put that about a zero probability, that that there was a planet skirting out down under Neptune and Pluto, but in a far wider orbit that never had any possibility of coming into the inner solar system, and therefore had no threat to Earth of any kind. Obviously, the Vatican very concerned about this object in the Old Testament called Wormwood. There were many different names for this, Nibiru, Wormwood, etc., going on and on. But they obviously being very interested in comets, which tells you, once again, I'll repeat it, the Vatican knew, and NASA knew, and Harrington knew, all of these people knew that Planet X would appear as a comet. And, of course, here I am, independent scientist, going to scientific meetings, being followed when I tried to have my own Harrington expedition back in the 90s to try and follow up. You know, now it's clear why they didn't want Jim McCanney finding out about this, because I would have blown their cover back then, because I had access to the Art Bell show, I had access to other radio shows. I had access to the scientific community, etc. Now, the companion of Hale-Bopp, this is a very important topic, and I will come back to some of this human intrigue part of this in a little while, but I want to talk about the companion. When it was very clear that Harrington took many photographs, he would have seen the nucleus of Hale-Bopp wobbling back and forth, moving back and forth. So even if he did not physically see the companion, he would have been able to detect it in the photographs. And also he would have been able to detect that this was the thing, literally four times the mass of Earth, that was affecting Neptune and Uranus orbit down below. And let me tell you, I'll be showing this as supporting material. Hale-Bopp was exactly, 100% exactly right down below Neptune, and was moving very slowly. You have to understand, when these objects are out there that far away from the sun, they're moving very, very slowly. It's only when they come in, get closer to the inner solar system, that do they start to speed up. But remember that it took 4 years for Hale-Bopp to get from down where it was below Neptune in the far reaches of the solar system down in the constellation of Triangulum and moving up towards the ecliptic. It took 4 years for it to get near Jupiter. It took another year and a half to round the sun, and then it took another about 2.5 years to leave the solar system. So we're talking years of time here. And moving out there where it moved very slowly under the orbit of Neptune and Uranus, they move very slowly in their orbit. It had plenty of time to work on those objects, four times the mass of Earth, exactly what it should have been, exactly in the location where it should have been. But what about the companion? The companion was very interesting, because that's what keyed off the Heaven's Gate people, that they said that this was a spaceship associated with it and coming in to basically to take them off Earth and to take them away. And that's what, you know, not to add to the somewhat craziness of this whole issue. I'll talk a little bit more about Heaven's Gate in a minute, because that has a bit of international intrigue. Also, some of the facts that you don't read about in the mainstream press. The companion. Absolutely, Hale-Bopp had a companion. And, of course, when the Heaven's Gate 39 people died in what I will be calling a mass murder, not a mass suicide, was that the Hale-Bopp, in fact, did have a companion. But Ollie High, now Hal Weaver of the University of Hawaii, came back with other photos, doctored photos, saying that, no, look, here are the real photos. Courtney Brown was the one who fudged the photos, lying through their teeth. And, of course, all of this CIA controlled. These astronomers, very much CIA controlled, because whether they were under gag orders or whether they were doing, you know, I don't pretend to know people's motivations for whatever. But there was a companion, and in the Canary Island Conference on Hale-Bopp that happened about a year after Hale-Bopp had come around through the solar system, the scientific meeting held by the European Space Agency on the topic of Hale-Bopp, Hal Weaver was number one on the speaker list talking about the companion of Hale-Bopp. So there's no question that they knew all along that Hale-Bopp had a companion, but the public story was that it did not. It was very visible in the initial photos in a little video sequence that NASA put up, which was trapped by Gary Goodwin, which started the Millennium Group page back in the 90s, of which my work was central to that, and another guy named Earl Crockett, who was a wealthy businessman from Los Angeles, and another guy who helped out a lot was a guy named Ray Ward. Ray Ward is the one who figured out and traced back all the photography of the University of Hawaii and the photos that were given to Art Bell from Courtney Brown. Ray Ward was the one who did the photographic analysis showing that the NASA photos were faked. And it's a very complex set of photographic analysis. But the end result is, yes, Hale-Bopp had a companion. And with that, you could also determine the mass. Some astronomers said that they did that, but all that NASA had to do was doctor the data to make it look like the orbital period was less, And all of a sudden they would have gotten a much lower mass for the nucleus of Hale-Bopp, much lower than what it was. And that very typically happens, that the data that goes to the Tier 2 scientist is doctored by the Tier 1 scientist to give them false results. That I've seen over and over again. But what happened to the Hale-Bopp companion? Well, you could see it as Hale-Bopp moved into the solar system and was on its route. You could see in the analysis, the good photography that we did discover from NASA, there was a pulsing going on, and it kept became more rapid, more rapid, more rapid. Eventually, the companion of Hale-Bopp nestled into the nucleus and became one with the nucleus. It actually became part of the nucleus of Hale-Bopp in the building process. There's other photos that show Hale-Bopp with a Swan filter, and I have that also in, I believe it, my Planet X, Comets, and Earth Changes book, shows Hale-Bopp taken with a Swan filter, which only shows ionized water, hydrogen and oxygen, showing 17 tails. And these are like, when you saw the actual video, these successive photos, the tails of Hale-Bopp, there were 17 tails, not one. They were like spider tentacles or like octopus tentacles streaming out and swipping around in outer space. This is what a real big comet looks like, and this is what the ancient talked about. They said Venus had something like seven tails at once, and that's exactly, Hale-Bopp also had multiple tails at one time, and that's because of this huge activity that's coming into the comet nucleus. In the form of steam, it's so hot. So a comet like that is picking up a tremendous amount of water being infused, and that's why the comet has an atmosphere already developed when it becomes a planet, like Venus. Venus already has a tremendous atmosphere, just a young planet from cometary development. So the companion of Hale-Bopp, it did have a companion, and it later became part of the nucleus. Heaven's Gate people now were talking about a spacecraft. They thought that the companion was a spacecraft. But there's something else that happened, and I got wind of this through my contacts at Goddard Space Flight Center, because at that point I was still able to call up. When the discovery of Hale-Bopp happened, I heard about it. I immediately called Goddard, and the secretary answered, and she recognized my voice. She says, "Hi, Mr. McCanny." She said, I can't switch you to anybody now because," and I could hear screaming in the background, just chaos, screaming. And that is because they had realized, number one, that this big comet was on an almost direct collision course with Earth. Now, this tells you something. These are the scientists that at Goddard, and these are the people at the time, I thought these would have been the top scientists, etc. What it showed me was that these were Tier 2 scientists, and that the Harrington information, the cap that Dan Golden had put on NASA and on Tier 1 science, had divided Tier 1 science away from NASA, and that the NASA scientists did not know about Hale-Bopp prior to its discovery by amateurs in July 23, 1995. This is huge. This is a huge confirmation, because the scientists that I knew at JPL and at Goddard did not know when it was discovered, July 23rd, 1995, they went crazy. They went ballistic. And I said, "What's going on there?" To the secretary. She said, "It's Hale-Bopp." She said, "It's Hale-Bopp. It's huge." And I thought to myself, "Oh, it's a huge story. It's a huge, you know, news story." No. What she was telling me is that Hale-Bopp, the nucleus, was huge, and they knew it. And of course, the official statement by NASA it was just a little bigger than average, maybe about 40 miles in diameter, 60 kilometers in diameter. And of course, totally whitewashing the news. Later, NASA claimed that it didn't take any pictures of Hale-Bopp with the Hubble Space Telescope. A guy named Earl Crockett in the Millennium Group did the digging and came up with all of the contracts. NASA had taken over 1 million photographs of Hale-Bopp and hid that data from the public. So tell me they weren't a bit interested. Tell me they weren't feeding this information to the Vatican, to the Rothschild banking industry that runs the world, through the CIA that kept the information from you, the American public, and the world. This is what's going on. Now this is crystal clear. Now you can see why this 4-hour special is so important, to pull off the onion layers of this event and expose it for exactly what it is. I want to give an incident that happened to me. I went to the University of Minnesota and I talked to an astronomer who I knew there. And I sat down and went into his office and started talking about Hale-Bopp, about comets, about planets, about Hale-Bopp becoming a planet in the solar system, about it losing its orbital its orbit daily. And this was an astronomer who was on the staff of the Arizona Observatory of the Vatican. And I could tell he was very uneasy when I was talking. He really didn't have many comments when I was talking about this. And when I got up to leave, he had a look of absolute fear on his face. He picked up his phone and started dialing. And obviously what was happening is he had to dial into his handlers to tell them that he had a meeting with me, because clearly he was fearing the repercussions if he had a meeting and actually had interface discussions with somebody about Hale-Bopp and didn't report it. I was up out of the seat turning around, and he was already grabbing his phone dialing. That tells you exactly what the sentiment of these astronomers was. That's an incident that happened to me personally. So now I want to take you through the sequence of events that happened with Art Bell. And this is very important, because Art Bell got nailed by the CIA and this big disinformation campaign for being responsible for the death of 39 people in the Heaven's Gate so-called cult. Well, let me start by talking a little bit about Heaven's Gate. Heaven's Gate's webpage was changed. It was taken down and replaced by this cult, crazy people, talk to aliens type of thing. They were a group of programmers, very, very good programmers. The term Heaven's Gate was the name of the business, because they were building firewalls and encryption software that the CIA could not break into in the NSA. And remember, by the way, that the NSA was already very active back then. They had actually been started with the CIA with the entire purpose of monitoring everything that goes on in the world. So the NSA program monitoring everybody was already going on in conjunction with the CIA. But Heaven's Gate was a term they used for their encryption software and firewalls, which the government could not break into. They had been warned to stop doing what they were doing, because in businesses were buying, they were very successful business-wise. And so anyway, the other thing is they were very clean living people. They were like vegetarians, very intent on healthy bodies, because they wanted to be in the purest condition. And this is their belief. And I don't care who you are in the United States or whatever your belief system is, nobody deserves to be murdered for your belief system. I don't care if you think about aliens or whatever. Doesn't matter. You don't deserve to be murdered because of it. And as long as they're not hurting other people, okay, fine. I mean, if you want to talk about crazy things that go on, L.A., California, Oakland, San Francisco, hey, that's the capital. And so you get all kinds of crazy things going on. So what was so unusual about 39 people in Heaven's Gate? Well, they happened to be competition for a company that was building what is known as Promise Software, Promise, P-R-O-M-I-S. That's eventually what the Justice Department was going to use to track you. It was a people management program system. And also the type of thing that would be used in Jade Helm, the type of operation that's going on today. A computerized database tracking system that had variables in it that allowed the government to basically manage you, the public. And so anyway, eventually, allegedly, that got into the hands of Osama bin Laden, which was used to sponsor the 9/11 event, which we all know was another government CIA Mossad op. But be that as it may, let's get back to the promised software. These people believed in Heaven's Gate, for better, for worse, whether it's true or not or whatever, doesn't matter. It was their belief system that there would be a sign in the heaven and that a large comet would come in to the solar system with a companion, and that companion was a spacecraft that would take them off, you know, and take them off of Earth. It also so happened that they had a big following. They had, it's estimated, 100,000 people that were following them around the country. When Hale Bopp showed up, the signal went out and said, this is it. When Art Bell posted the pictures with the companion, that triggered Heaven's Gate to send out a message to their people. There were an estimated 30,000 people on airplanes, cars, automobiles, and trains on their way to L.A. to meet with the Heaven's Gate people, to go out on a hillside and wait for and camp outside right on one of the hills outside L.A., and wait for Hale Bopp to come in and transcend them off of Earth. Like I say, better for worse, whatever, that was their belief. Now you got to understand, knowing that Hale Bopp, in the eyes of the CIA, the NSA, the World Bankers, the Vatican, and Tier 1 science, everything, was Planet X. It was on its way. It was on a near collision course with Earth. And they had 30,000 people heading to the capital of Zoodom in the world, L.A., to camp outside on the hill. The last thing in the world they wanted was that to happen. That's the night when, and now there was a plant. Heaven's Gate had a plant, like all, you know, the CIA infiltrates everything. So the their group had been infiltrated. There was a mole. And I have the suspicion I know who the mole was, a certain lady, crazy lady that talks to aliens, that eventually became the Planet X person out of, and who also worked as a programmer and owner, part owner of the Promise software. So this, as you can see, gets a bit complicated. So anyway, then Heaven's Gate suicide, mock suicide or whatever you call it, occurs. Art Bell is blamed. The University of Hawaii astronomers Ali Haino and Hal Weaver produce phony photos showing Hale Bopp does not have a companion, naming Chuck Schrammick and Courtney Brown as complicity in this so-called suicide. But let's look a little bit deeper here. Let's look at Promise Software. Who was involved in this? Well, a guy named Bill Hamilton and his wife Nancy happened to be the owners of the company producing the Promise software. And they had a lot of programmers who later became the disinformation crew, because all of those people had security clearances, the programmers. A lot of those people became the disinformation crew that raged through the later 90s and into the early 2000s that caused the dropping of the show of Art Bell, etc. But Bill Hamilton had another little gig on the side called Skywatch, that was a series of worldwide offices that were in all the major cities around the world. And the whole purpose of that was that if anybody saw or communicated or had any kind of information about UFOs or aliens or contact or whatever, they were supposed to get a hold of Skywatch, and it was supposed to be this independent organization, kind of like MUFON, but different from MUFON. And by the way, MUFON was very heavily infiltrated also, as is the disclosure program that's going on right now. I could talk about that for about an hour. But Skywatch was headed by a guy named Bill Hamilton. Later, Bill Hamilton wrote a piece on Jeff Rentz, page, and it was denying the existence of Planet X. And at the very last sentence, he goes, and there's no such thing as Planet X, and that's the end of the story, as if he's some kind of worldwide authority on this. But obviously, all these people rolled into one giant ball under this huge misinformation campaign that came out of these early days. And it's hard to say how many of these people really knew what Harrington had done. Probably not. My guess is that no. These people were too much in the public street. Eventually, Skywatch went under. And I remember that the day they closed all their offices, they were looking for funding. But there's no way that they were funding this international fleet of offices on donations. They were getting money under the table, probably from the CIA, and which is the police force of the world bankers. And if anybody contacted aliens, the first people on the planet that wanted to know would be the world bankers, because that is one of their sacred grounds, contact with aliens. And okay, this is getting off into kind of never land, but also if you look at Hollywood, the music industry, very much controlled by these same people. Eventually the climate change program, right now the Pope is doing an international tour promoting climate change. This became one of the primary motivations or power gathering facilities of the international banker cartel, which some people call the New World Order. Okay, so at any rate, let's go back to the Art Bell Show. I'm on the Art Bell Show talking about the whole incident. Whitley Strieber is a co-host with Art, and this night, and once again, Ray Ward, credit him for the amazing work on exposing the University of Hawaii Hal Weaver Alihainau, putting the fake photos up there. And the way he did this was he could tell the time, the date when these other photos were taken, and it was not the date of the photo that was taken by Courtney Brown, a very interesting analysis, and then showing that the companion was literally removed from the photos. But exposing this on the Art Bell Show, and I remember Art getting very mad. He says, look, we've already been through this. We're not going to discuss it anymore. And I said, well, I think you want to discuss this because you have been had. The photos that came from Alihainau and Hal Weaver were faked, and the one you got from Courtney Brown was the original ones. What happened back then is Chuck Schrammick went out in his backyard, took a picture of Hale Bopp, saw the companion. The companion did not correspond with any known star on a star chart. So he said, hey, this thing's got a companion. He sent it to Art Bell. Corresponding at the same time, Courtney Brown, who was starting his own remote viewing basically agency, received. Now, Courtney Brown was a professional astronomer also. He received the images of Hale Bopp with the companion from Hal Weaver and Alihainau, and they said, here, these are some photos, but you can't give them to anybody, and you can't tell them where you can't tell anybody where you got these. Courtney Brown sends it to Art Bell. Art Bell posts it, so Alihainau and Hal Weaver have to deny this, and of course probably were under a lot of heat from the CIA for ever letting those photos out. And so I'm on the Art Bell Show saying, Art, you have been had. The photos that were put in the national news saying that the companions were faked, were in fact the fake photos from NASA. And so anyway, when we got done with that, let me tell you, it was one of the shows of a lifetime to be on. But now today, the standard story, if you go to Wikipedia or any of these government disinformation sites, the standard story still says that there was no companion to Hale Bopp, and that that Art Bell was responsible for the death of these people. Complete fabricated hogwash. And so understand. And then eventually Art Bell lost his radio show, and the rest is history. And of course, but now that you know that Hale Bopp, in fact, was viewed by the Tier 1 bankers, the Tier 1 science, the bankers, the Vatican, as Planet X, now you realize all of the hubbub over anybody getting next to this comet and talking about anything. NASA saying it's a dirty little snowball, they don't have any interest in it. My work, which is central to understanding that this is a big comet, it's discharging the solar capacitor, it has X-rays, it has 17 tails, it's becoming a new planet, it's losing its orbital period from 4,200 years to 2,600 years as part of the planetary adoption process. All of this being blocked, and to this day being blocked. And what do you get as the public? A bunch of crazies running around the internet quoting out-of-date, incorrect information of Sitchin, this 3,600-year baloney, all of the other baloney that has come out regarding Planet X, and now understand that the whole issue, which I actually began because of Harrington's work, I said, hey, if Planet X is coming relative to what the data says from Harrington, it's coming out of the south. Well, this is what my work right now went and put the lid on, is that if there was anything related to Hale-Bopp, it should have been here a long time ago, because Harrington did his measurements in that region in 1991, literally a full 24 years ago. And so it would have had sufficient time to come into the solar system or become viewed. Now, that does not mean, I repeat, that does not mean that there isn't something farther out. That simply means that what Harrington was looking at was Hale-Bopp nucleus long before it was ever called Hale-Bopp, and he was calling it Planet X, the nucleus of Hale-Bopp, four Earth masses about the size of our moon, extremely dense, a huge comet, and becoming a planet, and coming back in another 26 years for the next round. So this is the end of hour two. We have two more hours to go, plus supporting material.